Brad Norris is a sought-after lecturer in the fields of strength and conditioning and human performance. He has presented on an array of topics that encompass functional assessment, exercise prescription, injury prevention, and program design across populations. Brad is my guest today. What's up, everybody? My name is John Campioni, and this is the Rock Tape Podcast.
Why don't we jump into it and get started? You know, Brad, you and I have never gotten the chance to meet because we were more than likely going to meet in Mexico this past January. But yeah, as you were telling me before we started that you had a pretty severe injury. So we'll get into that eventually because I think it's real cool to see kind of how you've been rehabbing yourself with your knowledge. And then with, you know, Rock Tape at your disposal. But tell everybody about you, Brad, you know, how you came up in the business, what your specialties are, and where you're practicing right now.
Yeah, so my path has been kind of a crazy one. I was a member of the Canadian bobsled team. So I was with the track team initially, and then I moved over to bobsledding. And I spent almost 2.5 years with the bobsled team and retired in 88 after some crazy crashes. So I had some really crazy injuries. And so the big shift for me, John, was I moved from working in that high performance environment, and I left there frustrated as hell. I mean, I was the guy who had tons of concussions and I had numerous injuries, a pretty violent sport, but at the same time, you know what, I left and my motivation was really simple. There's got to be a different way to do this. There has to be a different way to train. There has to be a different way to treat, to manage injury, whatever that means. So from that point forward, I mean, I went back and did my kin degree at Ottawa U. My master's degree is from East Tennessee State. I have a master's degree in exercise science and biomechanics. And then, you know what, work as a strength coach and as an exercise physiologist. But the crazy part now is over the course of that 25 years, I worked for the Poliquin Institute and some really high power people in the strength and conditioning world. And it's just been an organic shift for me. I've moved into more of the clinical side. So I'm in the massage therapy world. I'm an acupuncturist, fascial stretch therapist. I do ART and hybrid kind of versions of ART in my practice. So I'm more of a manual therapist. But the cool thing about that, I think, and I think you would agree because you come from a strength and conditioning environment, it's that ability to kind of bridge the gap between that performance model and the kind of rehab model and where do we fit on that continuum. And that's been kind of the real shift for me from a clinical perspective.
That's such a cool mesh of experiences and different components coming from such an athletic environment and understanding, you know, the athlete's mentality as well as their biology, and then getting in and getting into your study and starting to apply different things within your practice. Where are you currently practicing right now?
So I kind of right now, not a lot given my status, but with my injury, but the reality is, I mean, I'm all over the place. My biggest role right now is with Rock Tape in the sense that my big role is to go out and really demystify taping. And so I work in, again, both ends of that spectrum. I work with all the national teams here in Canada. So we work with the bobsled team, water polo, the Canadian track and field team. So I deal with them specifically. And then I have my own practice here in my hometown, Lindsay, Ontario, great spot. And so I kind of live and work here with a lot of the pro athletes and NHL players I work with. And then on the side, I travel a lot for Rock Tape. So I've got kind of a multidisciplinary role with the company and with my own practice. So I'm all over the place.
That's very, very cool. I'm always fascinated by kind of that nomadic type of practice where you're kind of all over the place working with so many different teams. Interesting question that came up. You mentioned that you studied at East Tennessee State University, but you're originally from Canada. What brought you to Tennessee to study there?
You know what? It was odd. I was in the midst. I worked with a really high-end track and field program here, and I just happened to know some guys in that same world. And I got an opportunity to do graduate work. And honestly, my passion is education. That's been everything for me. I mean, that's what I pursue day in and day out. So I had a great opportunity to go to East Tennessee State. I worked as the assistant strength coach there with some great people and worked with great track athletes. And then ultimately, I was able to do my grad work there. And that really opened my eyes to just the next level. what else can we do? And I had some great profs and people that just really motivated me to pursue some other things clinically. So I love East Tennessee State, great place to work, and the grad program there was fantastic.
Yeah. So I'm interested in getting a little bit back into your history, because I admittedly don't know much about bobsledding. I have always been one who really appreciates all sport, regardless of how in the public eye it really is. But I mean, this being an Olympic year, albeit summer Olympics rather than winter, we start to see a lot of sports coming into the forefront of people's minds. And you know, I always appreciate the athleticism and biomechanics of different sports. And you were mentioning how violent of a sport bobsled is. Tell us a little bit about the sport and what it entails for the athlete and kind of the wear and tear it puts on someone's body.
Yeah. I mean, wear and tear is probably the perfect way to describe it. And I'm very good friends with all the guys on the team, even 30 years later, but I'll tell you, it's probably one of the most demanding sports. I came out of a track and field background. I was a high jumper initially, and then I was with the Canadian team as a decathlete, shifted over to bobsledding because of the way Sport Canada was funding that model. And I got into a sport thinking, you know, it was just going to be this fun ride. And I realized it's a pretty demanding sport. They've compared a single run in bobsledding to a football game, the amount of trauma that you sustain during a run. I unfortunately had some crazy crashes. So I came out of a track environment and walked into bobsledding. And you know what? I had a lot of injuries as a result. But the crazy part now is I work as a member of the paramedical staff with the bobsled team. So I've been on the World Cup with them, in and out of the World Cup over the last 3 years. I would argue that that's probably given me the best perspective on what to do and how to treat them, because I really do have an appreciation for the sport. I love the sport. It's a great sport. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, I mean, I really have a sense of what we can do with them and what we need to do with them. And I understand the demands of the sport and the types of injuries that occur. So I think I've got a pretty good overview of what to do as a member of their staff, and I work with some great people. So bobsledding is it's a demanding sport, man. You spend a lot of time beat up, and it's very meticulous. You have to know exactly what every track feels like and looks like, and then you've got to be able to get prepared for a ride that sometimes doesn't go the way you want it.
So cool. I feel like this is an ignorant thing to say, but I'll go ahead and say it. It's the one thing I always notice with bobsled is the gigantic quads on the athletes and just the power you have to generate with your legs. Where do a lot of injuries come on with bobsledding? Is there a particular part of the body? You mentioned crashes, which doesn't necessarily discriminate where injuries occur. So are there common injuries for a bobsled athlete?
Yeah, I mean, the typical injuries that we see in track and field athletes, very explosive types of injuries related to that explosive expectation. Hamstring injuries all the time. I mean, we see hamstring injuries, lower abdominal injuries, hip flexor injuries, a lot of pelvic floor involvement in any of those injuries, because you are, over the course of 30 meters, you are going all out. You've got everything and anything applied to that. So it's a very, very powerful, power-driven sport, and the injuries reflect kind of the same injuries we'd see in sprinters, in long jumpers. And again, most of the athletes that I was on the team with, not as much today, but a lot of the athletes have come from a track and field environment, because it's a perfect marriage regarding sprinting and a lot of throwers moving to bobsledding, because it's that type of short, explosive expectation that feeds so well into that sport.
Right. Right. So cool with the power too. And I think it has such a great relationship with some of the things that we try to strive for, you know, when we're teaching our rock tape courses. And just, you know, I love sports like that, where you get to kind of, like I said before, you don't necessarily see it in the public eye. You know, a lot of people who are just a lay fan can really, you know, look at like baseball, for instance, and kind of dissect it a little bit. But you look at a sport that not a lot of people are too familiar with. It's so much fun to kind of break it down and dissect it. I got to ask, and I don't want to bring any traumatic experiences back to your brain, but what's the worst crash you've ever had?
So I had a crash. The crash that finished my career was in Calgary in a two-man sled. I had a crash about 4 weeks, 5 weeks earlier in Trevigna, Italy at the World Championships with Chris Laurie. It's online. It's YouTubed everywhere. It was crazy violent. I got knocked out and had a problem with my ankle after, but I came back to Calgary. I had a two-man crash that from one of the coaches' perspectives, was legendary. We went head first, went out of the track, came head first into one of the corners, and I got knocked out again. And that was the end of my career. But a crash was incredibly violent. But honestly, I mean, for every crash you have, the drivers are incredibly talented. Those are one-offs in the sense that you don't get these repeated crashes. And I can tell you today that the level of technology that's assigned to bobsledding is uniquely different. The sleds are different. The way that they look at injuries with these athletes and the way that things are managed is so different than what we experienced. So the bobsledders of today, with the Canadian team for sure, have a much different access to great coaching. The strength coaches and the clinical staff is amazing, and they dissect every portion of a run. So it's become this very, very meticulous overview for that sport. They've changed the way they deliver it.
Very much like a lot of sports have been, I don't want to say overanalyzed, but analyzed more, and they're starting to really look at a lot of the science behind it, right?
I agree. And the great thing with bobsled team, they've been very receptive to everything I do. And I mean, I'm biased. I've been with Rock Tape for 8 years. From the very beginning, I started teaching here when Capo did the first course in Canada. So I've been really kind of involved and very passionate about everything we do with this company. So I'm the guy that is the Rock Tape guy in every situation with the bobsled team. We're working with them, and they're going to be kind of a primary sponsor with us with Rock Tape, and we're going to have ambassadors with that team. And that's kind of the goal in Canada right now. We really want to engage national teams and pro teams, and that's been incredibly productive. We've had just awesome relationships with these teams, and they love what we're doing with Rock Tape. They love all of our philosophy more than just tape. They love everything that we're talking about, and when it's movement oriented, that's what they're really looking for.
Yeah. Tell everyone what it's like. And I don't know if you have a particular specialty, but tell everybody what it's like to literally be the one driving that sled. You mentioned a lot of the crashes and the track and stuff like that, but what is it like to be steering?
So I didn't ever get to drive, and that was probably a good thing because of my history. So I probably wasn't going to be the best guy to choose as a driver. I could talk to any of the drivers right now from my ear, and if you named a track, they could probably describe it perfectly to you.
Oh, I love that. That's so cool.
It's crazy. And when you watch it at the top and you see them with their eyes closed and they're moving through, they're literally driving the track. And I can tell you that if I talked to Chris Laurie, one of the guys that were on the team at the time, they could probably drive any track in the world still today, 30 years later.
Wow. Do guys or gals specialize in two-man versus four-man? Is that something that it's like, we go to either one, it doesn't really matter? Or is there little nuances between the two?
There's not enough of a nuance between those two things, John, to suggest that anyone's kind of a two-man or a four-man. We really just worked under the premise that, you know, the best guy wins, and he's going to put a crew together that he knows can do the job. The driver, in the end, once everyone's in there, the driver's responsibility is to do what he needs to do to get the bottom faster than everybody else. So that's it's a pretty straightforward expectation for the guy driving the sled.
Yeah. And, I mean, again, my ignorance of the sport, everybody else who's not driving, they look like they're literally just huddled in for the ride. Is that pretty much it?
You got to know where you are, because there's a few reasons. If the sled starts to peel away, you've got to know you might have to pressure differently. Just on the corner, and I knew the track as well as the driver. By the time we raced on a Sunday, I could recite every corner, and we would time the areas. You'd time out where you are in the track. You'd also want to know if you crashed how to get out. If you want to get out on a straightaway, you can get out on a straightaway.
Good point. You can't just take a nap
or get out in the corner because things aren't going to go well. So you've got to know where you are to kind of navigate. And if a crash happens, you've got to know where to go and if you can get out of the sled.
That is the fascinating aspect of stuff like this, is just knowing the little intricacies of, you know, I look at it from a spectator and I go, oh, they're just kind of hanging out and waiting for the ride to end. But no, there's so much more to that. It's so cool.
Yeah, I agree. It's subtle, but there's a lot of things that we do that we would do as crewmen. So it's been good. I work with the team now, and it's been kind of one of those pay it forward moments for me. I love the sport. It gave me so much. So now I get to kind of work with them and give back to the sport. And It's been absolutely the best thing I've done in the last couple of years, is to work with the bobsled team.
Oh, that's so cool. So cool to see some involvement in sports like that. Let's get into a little bit of your practice, Brad. You have so much knowledge, vast wealth of education, from acupuncture to soft tissue, to fascial stretching, functional exercise. You mentioned you work with Poliquin. Was there anything that kind of, other than your sporting background, was there anything in particular that kind of drove you to go into specific aspects of study different systems, different techniques? Or was it just things that you saw based on getting into practice that you knew you had to really know what you were doing?
I think mine was kind of this organic transition. I left as an athlete. I had been working with Charles Poliquin, and I taught for the Poliquin Performance Institute for a period of time. So I was really motivated by the whole strength and conditioning science and the world behind that. But Charles was amazing because he really had a sense of bridging the gap between performance and that clinical side of things. So myself and a number of the guys that taught for Charles were a little older. We're in our 50s, but we've all over time transitioned more into that clinical realm. It's not to say that, you know, we haven't stuck with the strength and conditioning piece. I still work with a ton of pro athletes here. But the reality is, I mean, there's a lot of things clinically we can do to get people back into the gym in a timely fashion, safely, so that we can kind of bridge the gap and get them back in there so that they can continue to train. So the motivation for me was really driven by my exposure to some great guys, Charles Poliquin being one. But then I knew as an athlete, there had to be a different way to operate, because I would get treated and be kind of sidelined. And I'd always think to myself, is there a way to kind of move this in a way, in the sense that we're going to make the transition a little more effective? It's going to be safer. It's going to be a little more explosive as far as what it does for me as an athlete. So I think for me, the clinical piece just allowed me to bridge the gap between what is that injured athlete and that performance side of things. So I kind of work everywhere in the continuum right now, and that's a good thing. I think it gives me some good insights into what I can do with athletes.
Do you as a practitioner have any particular favorite kind of methods and treatments? Like, are you somebody who's like, I love putting together movements and exercises, or I love really getting my hands on someone and really starting to work into that soft tissue?
This is probably more related to Rock Tape, because it's really changed my perspective on how I conduct my practice. I never lose sight of movement. Everything I do from my perspective, whether it's soft tissue work, ART, acupuncture, I'm always trying to get to that next level where I give the nervous system information that it's going to be able to act on. And my job then, once I create that platform or that blueprint, is to really find an exercise strategy that works. And, you know, I grew up in an environment where, and we talk about this all the time in our courses, less is more, but reality is I lived in that environment where everything was just more exercises, more load, more stuff all the time. Yeah. Yeah. And the reality is that's probably what's changed with my practice more than anything. I've become very good at kind of fine tuning what I do clinically to get the person into a situation where they're less threatened by movement, they have less pain. But then by extension, I'm very good at assigning exercises that get them where I need them to be. And I'm just not going to throw a bunch of stuff at them. But I think my practice has changed over the last few years only because I've been able to integrate the clinical side with more of the performance and movement side. And that's a lot to do with Rock Tape in our perspective.
So I think you mentioned it before. I apologize if I missed it, but how long have you been with Rock Tape? When did you start up with the company?
Gosh, I've been with Rock Tape from the very beginning. It was a crazy story. I was teaching a different taping course with a group of guys I work with, and they just happened to be using Rock Tape. And it wasn't even in the market yet. It was kind of a beta test, I think, at that point. It was in the U.S., but certainly wasn't here. And over time, I just fell in love with the product. I was using it, and I thought, this is really different. There's something very proprietary about this tape and how we use it. And so, you know, long story short, I basically contacted Rock Tape Canada when it was launched, and they invited me to teach, and the rest is history. I've been with them since the very beginning. I think it's almost 8 years now, 8 or 9 years. So I took the first course at Capital Taught here in Canada, and we've been kind of teaching together and working together since then. So it's been great, man. I love what we do, and it's been the best job ever. I can't imagine having a better job than being able to go out there and tell people about what we do.
100% agree to that. Yeah, and Capo is originally from Canada, so he's always loving going back there and working with you guys, I bet, too, right?
Well, yeah, the Canadian connection's crazy. Allison and Steve are both Canadian.
Yeah.
So we have that Canadian connection always, and we joke about that. But the fact is, I mean, they've created a curriculum and a philosophy, I think, behind what we do that people really, really just understand and appreciate. And we've had a great opportunity in the last few years to really build on our relationships with teams and clinics in Canada. So it's been a great ride so far.
Very cool. So we got to get into it because we kind of alluded to it in the beginning, but you had a pretty serious injury. I believe it was it last December or was it in January?
Yeah, gosh, that's why I missed Mexico. And the ongoing joke is my bobsled experience, all the crashes I had, and I got taken out by a flagstone patio stone and I was bringing groceries into the house. So crazy injury. Tripped over the flagstone patio on the way in. I dislocated the mortise of the ankle. I fractured the fibula and ruptured the ligamentous line on the medial side of my ankle. So my ankle was completely disconnected, but I came down on top of my right knee. I ruptured all four quadriceps individually, vulsed the top off off the patella, and dislocated the kneecap. So I had a period of 5 or 6 weeks where I was just in a hospital bed transferring to a wheelchair to move around. So it's been, I'm going to tell you, man, it's been probably the most sobering kind of experience I've ever had. And to think that I bobsled all those years, crashed at 140 kilometers an hour, and I trip over a patio stone, and my wife said that's what it took to take you out. Good God.
That's got to be the most frustrating part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, John, you have no idea. I remember the night I did it, I'm lying on the patio, and when I rolled over, I realized my ankle had come off, and I knew my quad had ruptured. And I was lying there thinking, honestly, how in the heck did this just happen? And that one second transition where I just caught my foot and I was down. So it's been sobering at times, but it's also been an opportunity. I've been at home with my family and, you know, man, I've been able to honestly test the waters a bit with our product. And I have to tell you, that's been kind of my focus the last 3 months, is to use this injury as more than anything for me is a tool to validate a lot of what we do. Not that I've ever in any way questioned. I wholeheartedly believe in what we kind of build on our philosophy. But the fact is, this was a really good opportunity for me to just sit back and say, look, this is going to be a blank slate. I'm going to come into this as a skeptic, and I'm going to sit here and I'm just going to use all of the tools that we have in play, and I'm going to use them consistently. And I can tell you, if I was passionate about rock tape before the accident, I'm way more passionate about it now, because I know how useful and incredibly effective it's been in my recovery.
How far are you post-surgery?
So I just had a surgery, actually. It was crazy. They had to take the screws out of my ankle because of the way they were fixed. So they had to extract the screws because they were worried it would break around and there was so much hardware. So I'm good. I mean, I put some tape on this morning, and we're stuck here in Canada like everybody is, and we're at home, but we have a spin bike and I was on it this morning, and I think I'm making progress. I feel good. I mean, I haven't done a lot in the weight room yet, but I'm moving around pretty well and driving, and those are big wins for me, trust me, given what I had.
I'll bet. Yeah, I'm curious to know kind of your progress, you know, once you had the initial injury and then repair, you know, getting into what you were saying, using some different rock tape tools, what are some of the things that you did? You know, if somebody was listening to this and going, I work with, you know, post-op patients, and I'm always curious how to integrate some of Rock Tape's tools, what were some of the things that you did specifically to kind of get you to where you are right now?
Well, I would say the first thing, and I just taught last weekend, I had an opportunity in the first time in a while to teach, the edema taping and edema control in the early stages, it wasn't only shocking to me. I went to the surgeon, and I had follow-up with the surgeon on a number of occasions, and I'd go in and he'd say, like, why do you have a tattoo? And I said, well, it's not a tattoo, it's tape. And he said, well, why would you put tape on it? You're not holding anything in place. And I said, this is completely different. We're looking at controlling inflammation and edema. And immediately he was like, wow, this is new to me. I've never seen this. But he's also been very surprised. I mean, I have great mobility at that 3.5 month period, but the way that we controlled swelling in those early stages, I think made a significant difference in my recovery. I'm ahead of the curve, significantly ahead of that curve right now. So the edema taping, number one, I think is, I talked on the weekend about it and just said, if anyone questions it, I can only tell you that my immediate application of that tape affected not only inflammation or edema, But even my pain rating, I would suggest, was significantly modified or mitigated by tape application. And again, I went into it and said, I'm going to be the skeptic and I'm going to be as critical as I can be about the application. And honestly, that first stage was amazing. The second piece for me, and again, I've taught the floss course and I've used floss for 30 years. When I was at Ottawa U, I was a strength coach there in the 80s, and we had Russian athletes in the gym and they were just wrapping tire tubes on themselves. And
oh, really?
It was crazy. They found different ways to do this. In hindsight, I mean, they were relatively insightful at that point, because I've used floss now for the last while, and I've been doing work on my knee and my ankle with floss, and it is quite literally my go-to when it comes time to manage any post-exercise pain, which is always an issue with me when I'm trying to get through this rehab. But right. Even more importantly, just the way that movement flows after I use the floss, that compression and the ability to kind of create glide in those underlying fascial tissues with floss, I think that's the game changer. And I, as much as we teach, I think as we learn more about floss applications and cupping, it just drives home the message for me. And I really am just an incredible fan of everything, because I've really found that it made a difference for me at every stage of rehab.
I'm fascinated that you said all the way back in the 80s. You know, I knew it was longer than it has been now, but I didn't realize that they were using methods like that, obviously with something like a tire tube, but I didn't realize it went back that far. That's so interesting.
Yeah, it was weird. I remember at the time everyone was thinking, well, it was just one more way to stabilize, and maybe that was their perspective. It was to give them feedback. But in the end, I mean, we know now that there's significantly more going on. But you know what? I've used it very, very strategically in my rehab, and with my ankle, given the injury, I'm back to full range of motion with my ankle. And I when I'm walking, I don't have to alter my gait. It's really made a difference for me. So I'm teaching a floss course, hopefully before the summer, and a floss cupping course. Hopefully. And again, if I was passionate about it before, get ready, because I'll have a lot more to say about it. So it's been a game changer for me, honestly.
Now, is this essentially what we call the all-in-one application? You're wrapping it up for the compressive forces?
Absolutely. And then I'm just layering in movement. I do that 2-minute protocol where I'll do some, active range of motion. My wife's a massage therapist, so she'll do some movement patterns and she'll guide patterns, and then do some external and internal glides by way of movement, and then close the chain. And in the gym, if I have an opportunity where I'm doing any closed chain exercise, that's my first application, is to use floss. And again, I think it's just upped my game and upped my rehab outcomes. So that 50-50 protocol, it's as simple as it gets. I mean, there's certainly much more unique and complex strategies, but that one, just compressing that tissue, giving the nervous system some great information, and then tooling movement around it and getting that system and the fascial system to glide really cleanly, that for me has been a game changer in rehab.
That is so cool to see it in more of a post-surgical setting, because I think floss is one of those things, everybody relates it back to those high-intensity athletes who really like to get crushed by, like, barbells and stuff like that, and then they wrap this thing around them, and you start to see a kind of almost like a negative connotation added to that, but it's so beneficial if you just know how to use it correctly and apply it correctly.
I agree. I think, you know, what floss has been on that performance side of that continuum. So I've seen floss, and athletes have used floss for years for mobility, and it's a wonderful tool. But I think sometimes we underestimate its effect in that post-surgical environment, where I have athletes and older patients with knee replacement. And I've used floss now for the last few years, and they have responded really well. The surgical teams that we deal with and give feedback to are astounded by some of the effects, and they're very supportive of it. So that part of it for me, I think from a performance standpoint, it's amazing. We currently work with the Ottawa Senators. So all the Ottawa Senators in their packages last year receive floss and tape, and we did in services for them, and we're going to work with all the NHL teams hopefully in the next few years. The Ottawa Senators, John, love it. They love what they get out of it. The ankle mobility that they experience and the clinical effects by way of application have been, I think, really game changing for them. But at times I think they were surprised, that they did see it as primarily a performance piece, and now I think it's kind of across the spectrum. They're using it in every situation.
So I'm interested, since you mentioned it, as you said, every player's package, you're talking about like a preseason kit that they receive?
Yeah, they get rock tape. Part of the kits now with the Ottawa Senators is rock tape. So we give them tape, we give them floss. The staff with Ottawa, they are incredibly progressive trainers. They're some of the greatest people I've seen and worked with. They really have a sense, an intuition about how to work with athletes. And so they're very, very dialed into all options, and rock tape's one of them. And so what they did last year was they created packages, preseason packages, so the athletes have floss with them and they have tape with them. And you know what? I do the same thing. I have a ton of pro hockey players here that I work with exclusively, and we do in-services for them at the start of the summer. So when they all get home, we walk through it. Floss and taping is part of their prep and in service by way of training. They all know how to use it because that way they can work on each other. So I do a lot of in-service, so I teach my athletes how to use the tools, floss, cupping, and tape. And that some of the guys have become pretty proficient, I can tell you.
That's really cool. Kind of teaching them to help themselves kind of thing. You know, what do we ultimately want to do with all our patients?
Yeah, and you know what? I always say this. I mean, people try to make it really complex. And the theories behind what we do and a lot of what happens is very complex. The nervous system is a complex system. But when it's time to give people some strategic kind of expectations or options, we can show anybody how to tape. We can show people how to use floss and cups. There's nothing overwhelming for them to kind of take in to understand how to use our product. So my athletes have all become, I think, pretty proficient at using everything that we throw at them, including floss, cupping, and tape, for that matter.
Really cool. I love seeing this stuff. You know, I absolutely love that it's rock tape, but I also just love seeing the stuff that is being put into the forefront of these professional athletes, you know, especially high-end intense athletes like hockey players.
Yeah, I've worked, you know what, I worked with a rugby team, Rugby Canada. A lot of the guys from my hometown, Crazy, are crazy as that is, small town Lindsay. A lot of really high-end rugby players have come out of here. Hockey players. We've had a lot of NHL players come out of my small community, and it's been great for me because I grew up with them. So I've had this awesome lab to work in for the last 30 years and work with all these high performance guys who I essentially went to high school with. And now I'm training all their kids. So it's been a crazy ride doing it that way. But, you know what, rock tape's a big part of what I do as a clinician, because I think athletes are going to benefit from everything that we hand them. And, I had a chance last year to work with some NFL players, and you know they were as receptive as anybody. And it's been a really neat process to put a lot of what we preach into practice with some of these elite athletes. And I can tell you that it's seldom do I have any of them come back to me and say, "Wow, I didn't experience anything." This has been, for most of them, it makes a huge difference in how they feel and how they move.
You know, I am. Thinking about, you're from Lindsay, Ontario, you said, and I'm looking at some stuff on Lindsay, and I see that A Christmas Story, some scenes from A Christmas Story was filmed there. a movie I've never heard of called A Cool, Dry Place, but I didn't realize you guys have some history in Lindsay there.
I think we do. I mean, it's a great community. I love it. I grew up here, and my family's here, so unfortunately, everybody in Lindsay has been exposed to rock tape and has to deal with rock tape day in and day out. I'm going to be doing some work with the police department here, and we're going to start taping the foot and the lower back, and we're going to monitor kind of their pain response. A lot of them complain of the same issues, and so we're going to use tape as a tool to do kind of a longitudinal study to see if we can affect changes in pain ratings, job performance, and those types of things. So I tell everybody, all the cops in Lindsay are going to be wearing rock tape in the next year, so be prepared.
I think that's so cool, because that's always a population I've tried to kind of get into and discuss with, because they're putting their bodies through so much, and I think you're going to find some really, really cool results with that.
The crazy thing with it is it's, again, kind of one of those transitions. I taught an in-service at a CrossFit in Burlington on the other side of Toronto. It was about a year ago. And two women came in, both police officers, and they said, "Look, we just showed up. We train here at the CrossFit gym. You know, I'm going to take the day and do what I need to do." So I sold them on everything, and we talked about everything for 4 hours, and I demonstrated a ton of the applications. She came to me and said, look, I am in pain every day on the job. She was probably in her early 40s, and she complained about the typical, you know, performance back chain issues. She had foot pain, some lower back issues, some headaches, all of the things we would assign. So I did a simple taping strategy on her, and really over the course of the next 2 days, she emailed me and said, this is the first time in the last 10 years that I arrived home from a shift, a 12-hour shift, and I was honestly pressed to tell you if there was any pain at all. So she was a huge advocate for us, and our hope is we're going to try to kind of, once we build the model in Lindsay and give the police force an opportunity to use our product and get a sense of it, we'll track all of those indicators, but at some point we want to be part of the larger Toronto police force, and I have a number of friends who are SWAT guys and guys who are on the elite teams, and we'll probably in the next year, that's going to be the next step for us.
Oh, that's so cool. I would love to see what comes out of that and working with groups like that. Really, really cool stuff.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think it's going to be another option to take it out of that athletic form, because a lot of people see rock tape and think only about athletes. And again,
yeah.
I describe my job to a lot of people as a guy that needs to demystify taping so that everyone understands both the high-performance athlete and that person who's a weekend warrior, what are the benefits? And I had a woman this summer in her 70s, a golfer, is a passionate golfer, and would go out every day and spend the entire day on a golf course and complained of knee pain. She was the best sales rep I've ever had. I taped her knee once, and everybody at the golf course wanted me to tape them. So, and she was very skeptical. So I've had some people that, you know, not necessarily high-performance athletes, really experience that benefit from what we do. And I think the police force is going to be a very cool kind of platform in which to kind of build on and validate some of the things that we already know are happening.
I am very much on board with exactly what you said, because everybody kind of gets into the idea that, oh, athletes use that. That's not for me, even though I have something wrong with me. And I mean, I've said this before, and people like to poke holes in this kind of argument, but everybody has an athletic component to their life, whether it's chasing your child or you're getting into a workout program because you know that it's going to make you healthier and make you feel a little bit better too. So like there's always an athletic component to someone's life. It doesn't have to be a professional athlete.
I can't agree more. I mean, I would argue that is, from my perspective, from a cultural perspective, I think that's the biggest test for us with our brand, is to make sure that people understand it isn't just about athletes and it's just not about elite performance. And again, I couldn't agree more. I have patients that say to me, look, my goal is to be able to reach up and grab something off the top shelf or pick up my kid without pain. And if all I do is apply tape and intervene in a way that, you know, allows them that resiliency after the fact, you know what? A pain-free movement, you don't have to be an athlete to want that. And you don't have to be an elite athlete to want to be able to move well and move cleanly. And I say this in my courses all the time. Look, the brain is designed to do one simple thing, keep us moving. And once we are apprehensive or threatened by movement, we're not going to be very compliant, whether it's an injury setting or just a performance setting. So if all we do with what we apply is really tune the nervous system to give them movement back, I would argue, man, that is the ultimate goal. I don't care who it is, whether it's an NHL player or a 70-year-old golfer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So well said. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I got to ask you a really serious question here, Brad.
Sure.
You're from Lindsay, Ontario. And as I look at a map, you're between Toronto and Ottawa. And you said that you work with the Senators. You're a little bit closer to Toronto. So who's your team? Who's your hockey team?
You know what? This is crazy, John. I'm not a huge hockey fan, and I train. I trained Jeff Vukovoom in his day with the Rangers, and I worked with a ton of hockey players. And I did not grow up in a family that was kind of hockey crazy. Which, trust me, Lindsay, Ontario is hockey central, small town Canada.
There's a lot of former NHL players from that town.
Yeah, we've got. I've worked with a ton. I work a lot with the OHL, which is that feeder system. It's the junior league in Ontario, in our province. And that's one of our goals, actually, in the next year, is we're probably going to create a relationship with every OHL team and all their training staff. That's my summer this summer. I'm going to be on the road probably from late June to Labor Day. And we're gonna try to in-service every one of those teams and really build a relationship with them. The unfortunate part is I work with the Senators with their staff, and they're fantastic. And they invite me all the time to games, and I'm not a hockey fan. I wish I was. And I'm going to go to a game to say that I went to a game, but I can tell you that it doesn't, it's not one of the things that I've really bought into yet, but who knows?
Sure. Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned the Junior League. I actually last year, with all my traveling, I ended up going to a lot of towns that had what it's called the United States Hockey League here. It's the Junior Hockey League in the United States. And I actually found myself going to all these cities that had a team. So like I started taking like a tour of the league, seeing different teams and just going to games. Cause I mean, they're fairly cheap. You can get tickets pretty easily too, but it's cool to see those younger athletes. Cause these are like 16 to 18 year old kids, you know, before they're even getting into college and stuff like that too. So it's really cool to see that.
It's great hockey. I mean, I love junior hockey. If I was to go to a game, I would go to a junior game. And I have a ton of guys actually from here play in the USHL.
Really?
Cool. So a bunch of guys that I train go to the USHL. The league is absolutely fantastic. So I know a lot of my athletes have played in the USHL and they speak very highly of it. But again, those junior players and those staffs, I mean, our goal not only is to deal with them, we really want to build a culture in Canada. Hockey is a huge thing. So the GTHL, which is the Toronto Hockey League, that younger league is incredibly well served. I mean, it's a crazy good hockey league. We really want to start to invest in those leagues so they understand what can you do with tape, what can you do with cloth, any of these things. So we're actually going to do, Dom Nicoletta and I believe, from the Senator, he's the head trainer, we're going to do actually a Rock Tape Performance Essentials course that we're going to hopefully start to deliver over the next few years to that hockey trainer in small town Lindsay who wants some other options to do something that's quick and effective for his athletes. He doesn't have to be a clinical specialist. He doesn't have to be the medical guy involved with the team. He can just be a guy that knows how to use something to really help those kids and help performance. So again, I think we're going to move into that sector where it's more of the younger athletes and developmental athletes and give people an idea of how to use what our products and what to do with them, what you can do with them.
Very cool. That is a lot of really neat things to look forward to and see where it goes. And just another example of how Rock Tape is growing, you know, throughout the world, really, and internationally. Very, very cool.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a big piece for us. And again, all the work for the national teams, I think it's been a real powerful piece for us as a company, because the teams are getting an opportunity to see what we do. And the feedback from everybody has been great. I did some work with Water Polo Canada and diving and sports that I never thought I'd kind of be invested in, but that's where we're going with this.
It's funny you mentioned water polo. Contact Allison. She was asking if anybody has any connections with water polo.
I just sent it to her. I sent it to her this morning, the water polo piece, the piece of them. And we actually did some work with the training staff for synchronized swimming. So we a lot of the water sports, because we have that unique H2O tape, I mean, a lot of them are very much attuned to what we're doing with tape, and they love the idea that you can put it on and be in water. And it changes what they're able to do with tape. And I think that's been a clear advantage for those teams.
That's so cool. I can't wait to see what comes of that. Brad, if anybody wanted to get a hold of you and ask you some more questions and get some knowledge from you, where could they reach out to you?
I'm going to be doing a lot of the blogs, John, and social media for Rock Tape Canada. So that's kind of one of my roles right now, and I'm just building on that. I have a firm called Power Tech Fitness. I'm on Instagram, so it's Power Tech is T-E-K Fitness. That is my consulting firm, so that's kind of my baseline for this. But and anybody can reach out through Rock Tape, and if there's ever questions about anything to do with application or theory or any of that, my email is simple. It's rocktapecanada@gmail.com, and my job ultimately is to give people good information. So anyone can contact me by way of that email, and I'd be happy to answer any questions about anything to do with Rock Tape or performance or anything that kind of falls into that sector.
definitely check out Brad. Definitely check out Rock Tape Canada for anybody in Canada looking for some courses, hopefully in the very near future. And reach out to Brad just to get some of the wealth of his knowledge. Brad, thank you so much for taking the time, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, John, I appreciate it. I can't tell you how much we appreciate what's happening with the podcast. I refer people to it constantly because the platform really does give people great information and insights into what we do as a company. So I appreciate the opportunity. I'm glad we had a chance to speak.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
My pleasure. Thank you.